Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
And I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. I'm joined by Buck Sanders and Greg Barnes. You're listening to the JohnnyT-Shirt.com Inside Carolina podcast. Gentlemen, I cannot remember the last time the three of us got together. It has been quite a while, but we are here today because it is football season, almost. A lot of folks coming off vacation, a lot of folks getting ready to really dig into the college football season. I'll be on vacation next week, so I'm a little late to that party. But Greg, let's jump right in why this is the good time to do this podcast, because while I'll be on vacation, I know next week is pretty much the unofficial, if not the official, kickoff to ACC football. Tell us what you'll be doing in Charlotte.
Yeah, Tommy, that's the fun thing about this month, because you get through June and you have a little bit of baseball, then you have some downtime, then you have the 4th, you have the holiday week, and then right around the corner is the start of football. And as you mentioned, starting next Tuesday in Charlotte is the ACC kickoff, and they'll have all kinds of celebratory things, festivities on Tuesday for the coaches and the players coming in. And then things really kind of get underway next Wednesday, which is when the Atlantic Division gets together with the media for all day interviews for a variety of different outlets and mediums. And then the Coastal Division, which of course is where North Carolina is, that takes place on Thursday. And then after that, on Friday, the Triangle Pigskin Preview, that's in Cary. That's always a big event. So we've got a full slate of media starting next week. And then shortly thereafter, as we approach August 1st, that's when training camp ramps up. And that's when things really get serious.
Yeah, folks have been wanting it to get here. It is finally here. ACC kickoff over there in Charlotte. So it's a good time to get a lot of information about expectations, especially. And of course, the media preseason teams will come out. The media preseason polls will come up. And we'll dig into that a little bit in this podcast. But, Buck, I wanted to bring you in because last time we really talked at length, we were talking about the hire of Mack Brown. And I'm going to toot our horns again. We were calling for Mack Brown as far back as maybe September, October, definitely, last year. But now it's been 8 months since Brown has been hired. Just from your perspective, you followed this stuff forever, inside Carolina and otherwise, is being involved in keeping up with Carolina football. But what's different this summer? I mean, it just seems a little different leading into this season, where in reality, Carolina's a 5-win over the past two years team. But it seems different this year. It's to me, it's 100% Mack Brown. Would you agree?
I would say, yeah, I would agree with that, Tommy. And the thing about Mack Brown is that he brings so much. I mean, he's my age, so I understand, what the requirements are to, really get fired up about anything. But Mack Brown has a ton of energy, and he has it at 67 years old. He's just a very energetic guy. We laugh about it, talk about it some. Tommy, you were around in the days when Mack Brown had his 1 in 10 years at UNC, and he would come on the TV show on Sunday morning after the game or whatever, and the way he would talk and present himself, you would think they were a 10-1 team instead of a 1-10 team. So his just has a tremendous amount of energy. I think that permeates from the top down. I think that the staff, takes its cues off of Mack's energy. And, I think the team probably takes their cues off of the Mack Brown's energy and how that filters down through the other staff members. It's just a different environment. I really don't think, I'm the last one really to ever talk bad about a previous regime. But I just don't think that Larry Fedora ever saw PR, generating excitement, creating excitement, displaying a lot of energy as part of his duties. And Mac Brown clearly does. So especially with, I think we've talked about this in the past, we're all kind of excited about the hires he's made, the work that Jason Staples has done on his video analysis with Phil Longo's offense and Jay Bateman's defense. That lends to the excitement. And then, of course, recruiting is kind of off the charts right now. So all of that is momentum and increasing the momentum. And, that's all great to see. But we should bear in mind that probably Florida State felt the same way going into the preseason of 2018, and that didn't work out well. So it's good to keep your expectations within reason, but there's definitely a different level of excitement around the program now that we haven't seen in actually several years.
Anybody that has listened to this podcast since I've been on it, which kind of dates back to the beginning, knows that brevity is not my specialty. But I think we can sum this up pretty well in just saying that Mac Brown won the offseason. And we talked when we were together back in December after he was first hired at the end of November. He won that press conference. And each step along the way, whether it be recruiting, whether it be press conferences, whether it be booster meetings, interviews on the radio, on TV, he's done exactly what he needed to do to provide hope, to provide inspiration, to provide a path forward. Give Larry Fedora a lot of credit. He got this program to the ACC championship game in 15. They probably should have been there in 16. And then the wheels came off. I think the fan base especially just kind of sunk down thinking, man, we thought we were almost there. And then, kind of had the rug pulled out from underneath us. Mac has provided that hope. Now we're getting into the situation where the season's right around the corner. So you can kind of tuck away the off-season part and really focus in on what's to come. And that's where Mac's next challenge is, because if this season doesn't end up being some breakthrough season, which I think it's unfair to expect that, to be honest. But at that point in time, if this team only goes 5-7, 6-6, there's going to be some criticism from various segments. But right now, everything is glowing. Everything is bright and beautiful and flowery and whatever other adjectives you can throw in there. Along the FSU route, like Taggart did, Mac has won the offseason, done it better than anybody else. So I think at this point in time, there's nothing he could have done better. Now we get to see how things play out when they actually truly matter on the football field.
But when I think of the FSU situation last year, and to be honest, when you were talking, I was going to follow up with that. So great minds think alike, I suppose. But one thing about Mac Brown and the Carolina feeling, I sense, is that, yes, you can win the offseason and be bad in the season, but Carolina fans, the Carolina program, everybody that follows it knows that Mac's done it before at Carolina. The same type situation. Come in, program's not in good shape. We can debate the levels of the cupboard being full or bare when Mac got here in either place. But I think that sense, at least for people I talk to, they believe that, hey, we know he's done it before. We have these high expectations. I'm not sure, like Greg said, the expectations are fair from a lot of people. And I'm sure there'll be criticism if those ones aren't met. But the fact that he's done it, been there, done that, at Carolina, and now we see the Mac is back t-shirt. That lends a lot of this excitement, don't you think?
Absolutely. And if you haven't gotten your Mac is back t-shirt, you can get it at Johnny T-shirt, which Tommy Ashley will get into in a little bit. But here's the other thing that I think is true, and I'd like to get Greg's opinion on this as well. But I would think that Mac Brown, being Mac Brown, particularly with a segment of the fan base that was around during Mac 1.0, he's going to have a little bit longer runway than any other coach they could brought in. Because Mac Brown knows how to sell what he's doing. And let's say they go 5-7 next year, or even 4-8, which is not out of the question. He's going to be able to sell that in a way nobody else would have been able to do. If they'd have brought in Scott Satterfield and he went 4-8 next year, there would be a ton of second guessing, recriminations. What are we doing? Why did we do this? Or any other coach he could have brought in, Neil Brown, some other guys that could have come to UNC. But for a segment of the fan base, I'm not saying for everybody, because not everybody was around during Mac 1.0. But Tommy, you and I were, and Greg was around for that as well, or at least part of it. And, he's going to be able to tell people that, okay, we went 4-8 in 2019, but it's going to get better. We're bringing in the right people. We've got the right scheme. And my favorite line from his Sunday morning TV shows, saying, look at the guys flying around. They're flying around the football. I love to see that. And the energy that he's going to bring to a 4-8 season isn't going to be much different than what he's going to bring to an 8-4 season. It's going to still be the same level of energy. So I think he's going to get a much longer runway than any other coach that North Carolina could have brought in. And I'm interested to see what Greg thinks about that.
Certainly. And I think kind of a good story to share with that is that when I talked to Tommy Thigpen last year, so before, when Fedora was still here, we got into talking about his recruitment. And one of the things that impressed him so much about Mac and about UNC and really helped him become such a great recruiter is how his official visit was handled. Remember, he came to North Carolina, I believe his first year was 89. So that was after the first 1-10 year. But yet he shows up, he's got to wear, he's got to wear a shirt and tie. And that's a requirement with Mac. He's got to hit all these requirements on this official visit as if, all right, we know you're a stud recruit, but if you're going to possibly come here, you've got to dress this way. You've got to act this way. You've got to behave in this manner. That's what we're going to demand, even while we recruit you. So you're trying out for us as much as we're trying to impress you. And that really stayed with Tommy. And again, this is after Carolina's coming off of 1-10. This is when Mac Brown is basically a nobody. And so fast forward, almost 30 years now, and we're at a situation where Mac's somewhat in the same situation, coming off a couple of bad seasons, even though this is going to be his first one. But yet he can say, look, guys, I've been here. I've done it before, like Tommy said. I've won a national championship at Texas, played another national championship game. And so if you look at how Tommy Thigpen's situation was handled, now you're adding all that success kind of to the same type of approach. And so you can only imagine if Tommy Thigpen was so impressed back then, what that type of player would be like now, and saying, okay, we've got to do all these things. And he's very optimistic, and he's certain about how things are going to play out. We know he's had a ton of success. He's done it here before because North Carolina's had trouble winning a lot of big games in the past. But yet when they did, guess who was here? It was Mac. And so, yeah, it really will pay dividends with recruiting for sure, but also with the fan base and with boosters. And I think the other element, we've talked about this, you're back in December, November. I haven't touched on it much lately. But I was in school during Mac's glory years in Chapel Hill. I remember what that was like. And I think you guys are kind of good examples because you're in your peak fandom pretty much. You're in your 30s and 40s and late 20s during those glory years. And so the opportunity to kind of relive that, I think is fun for most people that were big North Carolina supporters and fans back in the late 90s. And so now you get to kind of relive that a little bit. And you say, okay, you know what? He provided a lot of fun for me. I'm going to give him a little bit more rope because I understand that this is not as easy as maybe we thought. Because a lot of people thought, yeah, you know what? Mac got his built up. Torbush is going to step in. He's going to keep things running. It's not going to be an issue. It doesn't work that way. You've got to have an elite level coach to win a lot of games at the Division I level. And Mac has done that. He's proven that. And so, yeah, I certainly agree that he'll have a lot more runway, as you say, over the next couple of years.
You know, it's interesting. I was a freshman at Carolina in 89, and they coming off the 88-1-10 season. I think they beat VMI, maybe one of those. That was the only game or something. They certainly didn't beat anybody else of note. But people still believed. I felt like that being there, people believed that Carolina was going to be good. And I'll tell you, before I talk about Johnny T-shirt, but I'll tell you the moment that folks got it was that Georgia Tech game, I believe in 90, if my memory serves correctly, where they tied Georgia Tech and Georgia Tech goes on to share the national championship. Wouldn't have shared it had they not tied in Chapel Hill. I think that's the moment that folks really got it. And I want to talk about that a little bit after this. But first, let me talk about Johnny T-shirt a little bit. JohnnyT-shirt.com is the great sponsor of this podcast. And Buck mentioned them just a few minutes ago with the Mac is Back T-shirt. They certainly got that. They've got plenty of Carolina gear, especially for the football season coming up. But any kind of gear you ever need, Carolina related, you can get it from Johnny T-shirt, either JohnnyT-shirt.com or Johnny T-shirt on Franklin Street. Is always a place to stop by on Franklin Street when you're in town, and certainly you can get that fix online. Alumni, so they know what Carolina fans want and need. Great people to deal with, great customer service, just a fantastic business, and a staple on Franklin Street and a staple for Inside Carolina as well. You need to check them out. And if you're a premium subscriber to Inside Carolina, you get 10% off, whether it's in-store or online. So give them a call or look them up on the internet, or go visit them and get that 10% and get what you need for your Carolina fix for football season that's coming up right around the corner. But looking into this season, we've talked about the hype, we've talked about the hope and how Mac can sell hope. Butch Davis, I believe, went 4-8 his first season. That really didn't stop the train there for Butch moving things forward. Mac's bellwether game, like I said, I thought was that Georgia Tech tie in Keenan Stadium. Well, Carolina doesn't have any buildup, doesn't have any or run up to a big game this season. I mean, South Carolina, the first game of the season. And that, it's exciting for the fan base. It is a big game, to say the least. Your thoughts on, now that we're here, now that you got to start playing, how do you think it'll be handled? How will Mac handle things, and how will the build-up translate onto the field, at least in general? Because we can talk more about lineups and starters and all that, and we will. But, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done on this Carolina roster. What will Mac do to have them ready when they go to Charlotte on Labor Day weekend?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a Pollyanna, that, you know, all his geese are blue swans. You know, in terms of talent, if we're just looking at talent, if you look at the recruiting classes that have been brought in over the last 4 years, they're all the, you know, like right around 28, 29, 30. And I would say that, and I think this is objectively true, that if you look at the recruiting classes over the last 4 years, North Carolina has probably top 30 talent on its roster. Now, the challenge is for Mack Brown and his staff is to translate that top 30 talent that they have in Chapel Hill, into wins. And if you've got top 30 talent, you should win some ball games, right? You're not everybody you're going to face during the course of a season is going to have that same level of talent. But it's a new offensive system. It's a new defensive system. There are, you know, there's adjustments, you know, for everybody to make on both sides of the ball. They've got some special teams issues they got to iron out. You know, in terms of the nuts and bolts of it, there's definitely some, you know, strong points and some weaknesses. But if you look at the talent level overall, and you look at the losses that they had last year, I wrote about it in my column yesterday that, you know, they really only got blown out once all of last season. The rest of the games were relatively close, a couple of 10-point losses, four losses, less than a touchdown, a couple of them went to overtime. So it's not the same thing as inheriting a team similar to what Butch Davis inherited, for example, from John Bunning, which was not competitive in a lot of games. You know, they won a game here or there, but there are a lot of games they were just not competitive in. And, you know, I think, you know, once you look at that, you know, where you want to go when you're building a program is to go from, if you inherited a program that's not been competitive in a lot of games, you want to be competitive. That's your next challenge, is to get competitive. Even if you lose and go 4-8, you know, that's one thing. But if you're not competitive in those games, that's another. So, you know, I think those are the things we'll be looking at, you know, in this coming year. I think I'm going to have my expectations tempered for this coming year. If they get to a bowl game, I would consider that a major achievement. And I'm interested in hearing what Greg has to say about those thoughts.
Well, not to look in the rearview mirror too much, but we know that Larry Fedora did a pretty good job, at least his first 5 years, right? I mean, we know that 8-4 in 2012, they should have played in the ACC championship game had they been eligible. Then you go to bowl games the next four, play in the ACC championship game in 15. As I mentioned earlier, really should have, you know, that they beat Duke after you're up 14-0, you're playing in the ACC championship game pretty much 2 years in a row. And when you factor in all the injuries the last 2 years, you know, when you talk about what this team did last year, given that the injuries were maybe not quite as severe as 17, but pretty close, are we at a point where we can look back and say, you know what, Larry Fedora was a pretty good football coach, and that they did a good job as a staff kind of keeping these guys together, even though things were falling apart, and keeping them competitive? I think there's an assumption that Mack Brown comes in with his brand new staff and automatically the coaching is going to be 10 times better than what Larry Fedora did. And I think you have to be careful with that. I think with the injuries really skew things. I think the suspensions hurt things. A lot of things kind of went into Larry Fedora's free fall. But I don't know that I would ever say that he was a bad coach. I think he was a good coach. He wasn't a great coach. But I'd be curious to just for both of you guys, what's your perspective on that?
Ooh, Buck, I'll let you go first. I mean, I know that this topic will stir up our listeners, especially the message board posters. But I think that there were a lot of things that were done and done well. I think that the skill positions, especially and in offense in general, were certainly recruited well. I don't think that, but for the quarterback issues, we can debate why that happened, but there's no point at this point. But I think Fedora was always going to produce an offense that was good, but I think that football, I think defenses, even in these high-scoring games, I think defenses are ultimately what make the difference. But you may tell me otherwise, but I just think Fedora was lacking there. And I also think when it started going sideways, and this is where he's different from Mac, and Buck has already mentioned it, is that he didn't really know how to handle the fan base. And I'm not sure he really gave a rip about handling the fan base. Maybe that's unfair, but there was just a lot going on there. Bad coaches? I don't necessarily think so. I think there was some bad assistance a time or two, and certainly some bad decisions. But I think for the most part, I mean, at this level, folks know how to coach the game of football. I mean, I think you need a lot of luck, and I'm not sure Carolina had any the last 2 years. But anyway, let me get a commercial break first, and then I'll come to you because I want to get your take on all the rambling I've done and some of Greg's point as well. We'll be right back after the short break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Buck, anyway, you're more of a old wise man on that topic. You go ahead and tell me why I'm crazy, because I think it could have been a lot better. I'm not sure it could have been worse, but I'm not sure there's one specific person to blame.
Well, what I'm going to say is for all our message board people, direct all your hate at Greg Barnes for saying it. Larry Fedora was not a terrible coach. Because the consensus opinion, particularly at tail end of his tenure, I think there's a couple of things about that Greg and I could say because we were kind of privy to it, but he was stubborn about some staff decisions.
Yep.
Even in the face of pressure to make changes, he stubbornly resisted that. And, I think it's probably clear to everybody that his focus as a football coach, his background tendencies, is the love of his life was offensive football. And so he more or less delegated the defensive side of it, had to trust his people to deal with the defensive side of it. And, you know, I think that worked to his disadvantage a little bit at times. You know, I think bringing in Chizik was a, you know, a great move. He really helped the team, I believe, particularly in, well, actually both years, I think he did well with the defense, considering the talent level on that side of the football. But, you know, a lot of people had difficulties dealing with Larry at some level, particularly in the media. He wasn't very media friendly, for example. And so, you know, I think that worked against him because, you know, every time you have a coach, and they may revel in it in the moment, like, you know, Paul Johnson did at times at Georgia Tech when they would win a, you know, a ACC title when they were picked like fourth or fifth in the division. You know, he would revel in pushing the media's nose in it. And that's fine if you're winning. But if you have a down year or two and you haven't had good relationships with the media, your life is going to be harder. And, you know, I just think that it was a big dramatic change going from Butch Davis to Larry Fedora because they were totally opposite. You know, Butch Davis was all about the defense. He came from the defensive side of the ball. It was all about being conservative on offense, not making mistakes, you know, being very, you know, cautious on defense, making sure that you don't give up stuff. And, you know, he went like 8-4 every year after his first one. So, you know, that worked for him to an extent. And in 2010, they might have done, you know, as the old country expression goes, done wonders and eat cucumbers, had everybody been eligible. But so it was a big dramatic change from Butch Davis to Larry Fedora. And given all the other changes that the North Carolina fan base had gone through in that short span of time, I'm probably getting much more profound than I need to be here. But I think it was a real dramatic difference in, you know, the emphasis on defense versus offense. And then you throw in some games where North Carolina gets beat by East Carolina 70 to whatever, and nobody's going to like that. So losing to your rivals, nobody's going to like that. And Greg can take all the heat for that. you know, I'm shifting the blame to Greg for all of that, but you got to beat your rivals if you're North Carolina. You got to beat Duke. You got to, you know, beat State, you know, at least, you know, semi-regularly. So, you know, those things, I think, left a sour taste in the fan base's mouth. And, but, you know, we're talking about past now, and that's the one thing that Mack Brown wouldn't want us to be talking about.
Yeah, and the point of that was kind of, as you've talked about, Buck, when you look at last year's results, yes, you have the horrible loss at ECU, which I think sealed Larry's fate, and then the embarrassment at Miami. But there, you know, for the most part, all the other games were, you know, a touchdown or 10 points. And so if you do think that Larry was not a good coach whatsoever and that Mac's a very good coach, well, I mean, that kind of sets the foundation of, okay, well, then this certainly should be a team that should be pushing for 8 wins. And so I think that's that dynamic is what fascinates me. I'm curious to see because obviously we've lived through all the bad losses to State and the embarrassments to ECU and all these different components. As you say, we've covered that. It's in the past. It's done. But I do think that that component of, okay, how do we classify this jump? I mean, are we talking like a significant step up immediately? Or is this going to be a little bit of a gradual shift? Because, I mean, I just go back to Roy Williams real quick. When Matt Daugherty left, everybody thought that program was in the midst of being a dumpster fire. And Roy Williams' record his first year after Matt left was pretty much the same. And what did Roy say? It's like, well, Matt's not a bad coach. You know, right? I mean, you can't work magic. It takes some time to bring players in and to get people to buy into your system and all these kinds of things. So I just think that's a very fascinating dynamic. And if I deserve axes and arrows thrown at me or shot at me, feel free.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that that you're wrong, but what I'm saying is that, and you're specifically right on this point, I think, that, and we've seen this time and time again, not just at UNC, but like nationwide. It's very rare for a coaching change to happen, no matter who it is, and they completely reverse the field in 1 year. You look at Chip Kelly at UCLA. No question, that's an experienced, smart, savvy head coach, and he goes to UCLA, and his record is really not much better than it was the year before. And we see it in other situations like that, where coaches come in their first year. He might be a great head coach, and they ultimately might have a lot of success at that school, but they don't turn things around on a dime. And Mac didn't turn things around on a dime when he came to UNC the first time. So I totally agree with the idea that in your second year, when the entire team has had the opportunity to, you know, go through a year of coaching with their offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator to get adjusted to the system, you're probably going to see more results, you know, down the road than you are immediately. So I don't expect Mac to go 2-9 next year. I expect the record to be better than that. But I'm not expecting 8-4 or maybe even 7-5. But, you know, I do think that the more time a staff has with a team to instill their values, instill what they want from you, to instill just the plays and how to handle it and all of that, the better off you are. So that's where I'd go.
I don't disagree with any of that. I do think Greg's basketball Roy Williams Matt Daugherty reference is a great one. And I think that folks need to realize that, like I said earlier, and like we've talked about, that Butch went 4-8 his first year as well. I've said on this podcast, and we're going to talk about it more in depth here, is if they make a bowl, if they go to a bowl, whatever it is, and I can't keep up with all of them, but if they go 6-6 and get to a bowl, then expectations for the following year, 2021, or excuse me, 20, will be skyrocketed, I think. You bring in the recruiting issue, the recruiting factor and all that, then I think it's on at that point. And then it's all about that. But I think, and Greg, let's talk about this a little bit. I think that, A, Larry Fedora would still be here if the quarterback situation was managed better. But does one player or one position, does he make whoever it is make as big a deal and as big an impact as some Carolina fans are thinking or expecting? If Sam Howell starts, or if Jay Schroeder starts, Cave Jordan starts, they have a great season, are the 7 or 8 wins expectations then justified? Or you know, all things considered. I mean, I think that position, had that not happened, Larry Fedora would still be here. I don't want to keep talking about Larry Fedora, but will they make that big a difference for a Mac Brown-led Tar Heel team?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that if Larry Fedora had a, yeah, it doesn't have to be a Mitch Trubisky. If he has like a Bryn Renner, then he'd still be the head coach at North Carolina. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And how significant is the quarterback position when we're talking about college football? It is the end-all, be-all. Larry Fedora acknowledged that. He's said that several times. You know, why does Mack Brown have a national championship? He had a generational talent in Vince Young. I mean, we've seen what Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray have done. When I sat down with Tommy Thigpen last year, we were talking about the 2010 team when he was at Auburn. And he said, look, North Carolina's 2010 team had more talent than Auburn did. And something we've talked about. But who do they have at quarterback? At Cam Newton. And so there's no question that if you have a very good quarterback, that's worth a number of wins. The challenge for this group of quarterbacks is that they're all young and that the first half of UNC schedule is tough. But if they come out of the gate against South Carolina and whoever it may be, you know, if it's Howe or Fortin or Reuter, and they are lights out and they are elite and they win that game, expectations are going to change. We can't base our preseason expectations on the possibility that one of these kids is an absolute stud from day one in a brand new system. And so, for sure, and to your initial point, Tommy, about next year, you know, let's say even if Reuter, whoever Reuter starts, let's just say that, and he shows over the course of the season that he is getting significantly better, where they're competitive in every single game, they're winning games late, they're able to get to a bowl game. Yeah, I mean, expectations are going to be through the roof for 2020. And rightly so, because you're swimming upstream right now. Yes, you have recruiting helping you, but that's not really helping you right now. I mean, you may have a few kids that can step in and be beneficial. That's kind of more in the future. Right now, you've got a tough first six games. You're learning a brand new system on both sides of the ball. You have new coaches, and you're having to rely on a freshman quarterback. Not maybe, you are relying on a freshman quarterback. We just don't know who it is yet. And so that's a lot of things that have to go exactly right for North Carolina to get off to a good start, and that's what would be needed for this team to really exceed expectations.
Buck, I'm going to bring you in here and get your thoughts there. I mean, Greg's point's a great one. It is going to be a freshman quarterback one way or another. It's going to be one of those three guys. And then on top of that, there's going to be some youth on that offensive line as well. But like we've said, South Carolina holds the key to the expectations. I don't think we can base any expectations until we see that South Carolina game. But your thoughts on the quarterback position, that importance, and all of that?
I'm not going to put as much weight on the South Carolina game as you seem to be putting on it. But
I'm just saying for expectations.
Yeah, and I get that. But I think there's levels there. If South Carolina blows North Carolina out in that first game and it's ugly and North Carolina looks terrible offensively and defensively, that's one thing. But there's gradations beyond that. If it's a highly contested game, I'm not setting anybody up to, claim moral victory. What I'm saying is that I'm not going to put as much weight on the South Carolina game as maybe some other people might. I think it's an important game. If they win that game, then expectations are going to be off the charts. But I'm not putting as much weight on that game, win or lose, as maybe some other people. But to Greg's point, I do think that, in college football, either you need, to play at a high level. To play at a high level, you either need a quarterback that plays at an elite level, or you need a defense that is really stout. And the way to win championships, whether it's a coastal division or whatever you want to talk about, the college football playoff, you kind of need both. But North Carolina's problem was that in my opinion, the defensive side of the ball was kind of an afterthought in the Larry Fedora era. And again, we're talking about Larry Fedora, which we don't want to be talking about, but we're doing it anyway. The defense was more or less an afterthought in the Larry Fedora era. So when he got to a season where he did not have superior quarterback play, that alone, leave out injuries, leave out suspensions, leave out whatever you want to, schedule, whatever. If once you get to that point where you're not getting superlative quarterback play on a team where defense is not as emphasized as it is in other places, then you're going to see a dramatic drop off. Maybe not a 2-9 drop off, not maybe a 3-9 drop off, but you're going to see a massive drop off when you go from having a Marquise Williams to having a Mitch Trubisky to not having either one of those guys, and your defense can't bail you out. Then that's the recipe for disaster. And I think, encouragingly, let's talk about the Mac Brown era a little bit. We're going to see a head coach that's going to equally emphasize both sides of the ball. And there's going to be some games, I almost promise you, that there's going to be some games this year where Mac Brown is going to be relying on his defense to win the game, or at least get them to the fourth quarter where they can win the game. And there's going to be occasions where he's going to be depending on the offense. But it's not going to be like the Larry Fedora era in the sense that the way we're going to win this game is we're going to score a ton of points, and the other team is not going to match that. They're not going to be able to match that no matter how bad our defense is. That's going to be different. And you're going to hear that probably next week at the ACC football kickoff. You're going to, you know, hear that throughout the season. There is going to be more of an equal emphasis on the value of both sides of the ball than what we've seen in the past during the Fedora era.
All right, Greg, let's start wrapping this one up. Let me ask you guys a couple of general questions. Going into ACC kickoff, going into preseason camp, starts August 1st and gets rolling. Greg, your season prediction, or your – give me a – I don't want to put you on the spot that much, but I will. Your thoughts on how Carolina's season ends up prior to any camp information, prior to any – preseason games prior to South Carolina. We're at June 10th, 11th, 12th here, July 10th, 11th, or 12th. Your realistic thought on where Carolina ends up in this season, in Mac Brown's first season back at Carolina?
Yeah, I think this is a bowl team. And I think this is, as we talked about, I mean, last year, as bad as it was, there's a ton of injuries. They were competitive. You know, they had a very poor quarterback situation. And I think by the end of the year, the guys were kind of beat down a little bit. And I think going into that year, I thought that would be probably a 6-6 team before suspensions and injuries. And so I do think that the talent is there. As I mentioned earlier, I think this is a tough start. I mean, when you look at South Carolina, Miami, at Wake, App State, Clemson, at Georgia Tech, at Virginia Tech, I know Georgia Tech's most likely going to have a tough transition year. But that's just a tough start of games when you factor in a freshman quarterback, brand new schemes. I mean, I think it's kind of been overlooked that, you know, Phil Longo, this is his third season at the Power 5 level. Jay Bateman, this is his first season at the Power 5 level. That matters. I mean, it helps that you've got Mac Brown as your CEO. But there's going to be a learning curve there. And so while I do expect this team to kind of reel off some wins late, and be able to get to a bowl game. I think it could be a little bit humbling early. But again, we're not looking at this as this has got to be Max. This has got to be a situation where Mac has a great first year. I think that's in the years to come. I think this year's gravy. I mean, I think if you can get to a bowl game, I totally agree with you, Tommy. You get to 6-6, the sky's the limit. You know, in 2020 and 21. Now, 2020, you're talking more 8-9 wins, maybe, if things go to plan. But then after that, after you get a couple really good recruiting classes in, then you can really start talking about, okay, you know, can this program get back to 10 wins? Can it get to a situation where it's competitive with maybe a Clemson once again in the ACC championship game? So I do think it's a potential bowl team. I've had them pegged at 6-6 from a long time ago, and I'll stick with that. And I think that would be a very good year for this program.
Buck, you're up. I'd love to hear your thoughts. From talking to people, talking to big-time supporters of Carolina football, talking to everybody, your thoughts on just where it ends up. I think I'm leaning to agreeing with Greg, unless you tell me something otherwise.
Well, in the world of college football projections and predictions, if we're looking at objective data, if I were to predict a 6-6 season, I would be the most optimistic person on the planet. If you look at, for example, Bill Connolly, and I'm a big fan of Bill Connolly. Greg, I think, is a fan as well. But if you look at his projected margins for next year's schedule, North Carolina's only predicted to win 3 games. Georgia Tech, they're favored by 4.1. Duke, they're favored by 2.8. And Mercer, 27.3. But they're only predicted by a projected margin by Bill Connolly to win 3 football games next year. If they win 6, that probably means they beat Wake Forest, which is favored by 2.4. They beat Duke, which is favored by 2.8. They beat Virginia, which is favored by 2.2. And they beat Pittsburgh, which is favored by 3.1. So they have got to win almost every game that they play where they're an underdog by 3 points or less. So 6-6, actually, here's an opportunity for the message board people to ream me and not take the heat off of Greg a little bit. If you're predicting 6-6 for UNC, then you are a highly optimistic person, and they may well get to 6-6. I think they probably will. But to make that prediction off the data, you look at the ESPN FBI, Bill Connolly's data, 6-6 is a very optimistic prediction for UNC in 2019. And so if they get to 6-6, yes, then most definitely expectations will be huge in 2020, because 6-6 realistically is on the extreme high end of probabilities for 2019. So we'll see how it goes. But, for folks that just, sort of assume or think that, well, they should easily get to a bowl, they're not looking at the same numbers I'm looking at.
Well, let me respond to that just quickly, Tommy. Buck knows I'm as big of a advanced metrics guy as he is. But one thing that database right now that we're looking at doesn't take into account is the injuries. In North Carolina's game against Duke last year, once Antonio Williams left the field in the first quarter, UNC was without 18 scholarship players, including, I think, 3 quarterbacks maybe at that point in time. Crawford, of course, was out for the year. J.J. McCargo was out, starting center. KJ Sells was out. So there's a lot of injuries. And one thing people, again, I think kind of overlooked from last year is that in 2017, while it wasn't a strict guideline, the ACC still had their injury policy. And Larry Fedora, while he didn't have to do it, he abided by it a little bit. And so we could actually get numbers of, okay, this guy is not available today. And that's how we were able to kind of tabulate how many guys were out. It was, I think, 232 maybe games missed due to injury. Not starts, but games missed. Well, the ACC did away with that before the 2018 season. And so we didn't have anything to base injury information off of. And we kind of made the decision, you know what, we're going to follow it as closely as we can. We're going to report injuries when we can. But we're not going to have the hard data that we were able to have in 2017. So there's a reason Mack Brown really talked about, we're trying to figure out why there were so many injuries the last 2 years. He talked about that in the spring. And so I do think that plays a role. And that's one of the reasons, you know, going into last year, I did think that was a 6-6 team before the suspensions, before the injuries. And so I don't think the metrics really show that quite yet. And they shouldn't. I mean, that's hard to factor in. But that's one of the primary reasons I have them at 6-6. Yes, I am optimistic. This is kind of my nature. And we know with projections that has not played out well in the past. But that is why I think this team will be better than what a lot of the metrics will show before the season starts.
Great stuff. Like I said, I agree. I think 6-6, I think, and Buck, unlike you, explained better than I can. I just think South Carolina game's huge for a variety of reasons. And I think
you always think the first game of the year.
Is big, Tom. And I'm usually
he
does. Right.
He says that every year.
Because in 2015, right, South Carolina game was tremendous.
Or Georgia.
That's right, Georgia.
Yeah, the Georgia game means more than anything in the world. You know that
California.
Yeah. Well, I'm guilty of that too.
Well, I know when
probably
I saw that California game.
Probably not
like,
as guilty as Tommy, but I'm still guilty of that kind of thinking. But I'm not going to put a huge amount of weight on that South Carolina game this year. It would be awesome if they win it, but I don't think if they win, I don't think that necessarily means, oh, they're going to be an 8 or 9-win team. And if they lose, I don't think that means they're going to be a 2 or 3-win team. So, that's where I'm at.
Well, y'all will not stop me from believing that South Carolina game's huge. For
we
more
know
than
that.
Wins and losses.
We know that.
I could go down the list of why it's huge.
Yeah, I know. We know.
But I'll admit, when I saw the California game, that was an uh-oh game after watching that one. But at any rate, it's been fun to get the band back together a little bit. We'll do it plenty more over these next weeks to come. Carolina football is here. Greg will be in Charlotte covering ACC kickoff and then the Pigskin Classic to get you some content next week. I'll be on the Outer Banks. So if anybody's near Hatteras or Frisco, come say hello. I'll be somewhere sometime down there. Buck, been a pleasure talking to you, Greg. Appreciate it. Y'all have been listening to the Inside Carolina podcast with Johnny T-Shirt as our sponsor. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.